League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This week's episode of The Skating Atheist is brought to you by Mitt Romney's new brand of baking soda, Mormon Hammer. Guaranteed to keep your fridge as free of odor as it is of alcohol, caffeine, and gender equality. So send one of your wives to the store and tell them to look for the whitest baking soda on the shelf, Mormon Hammer. And now, The Skating Atheist.
Behold the atheist's nightmare. Now, if you study a well-made banana, you'll find the maker of the banana, Almighty God, has made it with a non-slip surface.
Good news, everyone. I'm George Robb, and as the producer of the Geologic Podcast, I assure you that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
Thursday, it's April 11th, and bananas are my worst nightmare. I'm your host, Noah Illusions, and from climatically schizophrenic New York, New York, this is The Skating Atheist. On this week's episode, a Louisiana legislator tries to teach kids about religious freedom by taking it away. We'll use the word fuck more times than there's any real need to, and my wife and my best friend will join me for the most disappointing threesome of all time. But first, the diatribe. Religion at an early age. My parents were religious, but they weren't churchgoers, and they only made a half-ass attempt to brainwash me. It didn't stick. Now, I'd say I was proud of this fact, but atheism is nothing to be proud of. Outsmarting a book that starts contradicting itself in the second chapter isn't very hard, and as I proved for many years after rejecting my parents' faith, you can be both an atheist and a gullible dipshit simultaneously. So I didn't go for the whole religion thing, but I was every bit as irrational in my puerile, new-age, hippie, tie-dye, goatee-anything-goes neo-pagan spiritualism. I may have dismissed the doctrines, but I still had a soft spot in my brain for ancient wisdom. What's more, I wanted the magic. I wanted the eternal life. I just wasn't willing to get them from a church. So I alternately identified myself as a Wiccan, a spiritualist, a Thelemite, or my personal favorite, a Pangeantheologist. I read books on witchcraft and Kabbalah and chakras and high magic and low magic and herbal magic and color magic and chaos magic and shamanic magic and Enochian magic, and I read the I Ching and tarot cards and runes and palms, and I read Aleister Crowley, I read Raymond Buckland and Donald Craig and Israel Regardi and Peter J. Carroll, and I went to pagan communes, I met gurus, I went on silence retreats, I danced naked around bonfires, I called upon ancient spirits, I invoked undines, and deep down I knew the whole time it was bullshit. And don't get me wrong, the cognitive dissonance wasn't that hard at first, because I was getting laid, I was having fun, I was hanging out with cool people, but it got harder and harder the more I learned about this shit. You know, there were never any deeper secrets the deeper you went, and there were never any results. And as I'm going through this whole 5-year acid trip of the soul, something else was happening too. Even though I wouldn't realize it for quite a while, I was steadily eroding the foundation of my bullshit, because I started to see the images that were being returned from the Hubble Space Telescope. And like practically everybody back then, I fell in love with these images as soon as I saw them. I was fascinated and I couldn't get enough. I wanted to know more about what they were. And more than that, I wanted to know about how we got them and what they meant and the incredible universe that they revealed. And it was slow and it was painful, but that right there was the origin of my love for science. Somehow all those underpaid, uninspired public school teachers had failed to instill any real appreciation for something as fascinating as everything in my developing mind, and it took seeing the universe in this scale for me to truly appreciate the wonders of human curiosity. But it sure made that cognitive dissonance a lot harder. After all, if science said what I believed was bullshit and they could back it up with pictures of the entire fucking universe, who was I to disagree? You know, even the young religions had a multi-century head start on science when it came to the whole heaven thing. They're happy to tell you what it looks like and who's in charge and how you get there, but they never managed to take any pictures. We never glimpsed the earliest stars through the power of herbal supplements. We never saw a cloud of dust 4 light years across through proper breathing techniques. We never saw galaxies forming with color-infused water. Sure, you eat enough mushrooms and you get into a sweat lodge and you'll see all the bright lights and pretty colors Hubble has to offer, but there's nothing there. Just like every other silly little spiritual distraction, there's nothing there. It's all empty, hollow, meaningless, unsatisfying chicken soup for the brain. It demands that you suspend your belief even to the point of suspending your own senses. It demands you open your mind to the point where your brain falls out. It demands that you practice for years at something that you can't actually get better at. It demands that you nod along with every stupid postmodernist notion some yoga instructor blurts out because you don't want to be the only person at the party who's wearing incredulity. But science, as Carl Sagan said, brings the goods. You know, the appeal of all that spiritual mumbo-jumbo was rooted in a desire to be part of something larger, something older, but when I glanced at the universe through the eyes of a space telescope, I saw that science could offer me something that was larger and more profound than anything any New Age guru could dream up. And what's more, I didn't have to suspend anything. I didn't have to give it anything. It was tangible, it was real, it was provable. Unlike the truth that was offered by faith, science demanded nothing in return, and that's how the Hubble saved my soul. All right, so here's the part I don't understand. If God made man out of dust, why is there still dust?
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me tonight for headlines is my Fetus Akatis, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to do whatever it is a Fetus Akatis does?
What does a Fetus Akatis do?
I think he's just like a poorly developed character that shows up once in a while and is loyal.
All right, well, obviously then I'm ready to do that.
All right, in our lead story tonight, the state of North Carolina decided to declare a state religion last week. Then the ether wore off, and they wondered who that lump in the bed was, where that tattoo came from, and what the fuck they were thinking.
Which religion did they decide to declare as their state religion?
Three guesses. The story starts in Rowan County, North Carolina, go Mustangs, where a lawsuit threatened to stop county commissioners from opening their meetings with a prayer. They had two choices here. One was to concede, give up the prayer, and not look like stupid assholes. The other was to try to rewrite the Constitution. Guess which one they picked?
The latter.
Yeah, well, you know, they were trying to invoke this idea. They say that the Constitution forbids the federal government from declaring a religion, not the states. And that's what they were thinking with this bill.
Wonderful. I actually believe in federalism to some extent, you know, with a balance of states' rights and federal jurisdiction, you know, depending on the situation. The problem is that almost every major example of a state trying to exercise rights is somehow extremely racist. Guaranteed.
Or at least extremely bigoted in this case.
Yeah, I'm okay with bigoted states ignoring federal laws as long as they give up their, you know, like, senators and representatives in Congress, too. That would be fair. If you want to build little racist enclaves, that's fine. You know, you just lose all privileges and get treated like a hate group.
Well, but now, to be fair, they did try to do that once before and we didn't let them. Now, I'm not really sure that there's any constitutional ground for that argument. I'm kind of skeptical of it, and so is apparently House Speaker Tom Tillis. He killed the bill as soon as there was national media attention around this. And what cracks me up about that is that at some level, the North Carolina legislators didn't realize that there was going to be a big media stink about this.
They got to deal with it. They got some, you know, large populations of rational, educated people now. Universities. Sucks for them.
Well, I can tell you, from my experience living in the Bible Belt, it's really easy to lose track of the fact that there are rational and educated people there. But that's it really speaks to why we need these watchdog groups. We need somebody paying attention to this crap. And in I'll see your state religion and raise you 12 pounds of raw batshit news, Louisiana State Representative Katrina R. Jackson has proposed a new bill that would force students to recite the Lord's Prayer along with a Pledge of Allegiance every morning. With an inspiring effort to yet be the most destructive Katrina in Louisiana's history, Representative Jackson attempts to justify the bill. You had I'm sure you had a Katrina joke in there somewhere, right? No? I knew I'd be stepping on one of yours when I did it.
I think it's a little too soon, no? Even for me, I know that's crazy.
This is the most crazy bill. I mean, yes, it's just another one of these pray-in-school bills, but the way she tried to justify it was the most Orwellian shit since Orwell.
I don't get this. We let religious people send their kids to schools where they can pray whenever they want, and we let them use scripture as science texts. Like, that's already allowed. They're getting it. We're giving them a lot of space there, I think, you know, being nice about it.
Well, now, I had to read this passage out of the bill, too, because this just goes to show you the level of cognitive dissonance that they go to here. The recitation shall be conducted so the students learn of America's great freedoms, including the freedom of religion symbolized by the recitation of the Lord's Prayer. Religious freedom symbolized by forcing you to recite the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. It's that one.
Christmas, you're like that terrible roommate who doesn't know how to share the common space when you first move into your place.
Good analogy.
You know, one person puts up the TV, another puts up a couch, you know, another puts up a shelf, a lot of good books on it. And then Christianity puts a giant crucifix in the middle of the floor. Then they have the audacity to complain that everyone is rudely ignoring the huge obtrusive structure that's blocking all the entertainment, comfort, and knowledge. Fucking assholes.
Well said. And following up on a story we covered back in episode 4, the big Jesus picture in Jackson, Ohio is coming down.
Nice.
You'll recall a flurry of defensive posturing by the school board who insisted that nothing on heaven and earth was going to make them take down their beloved Jesus picture. Well, it turned out what it took was an insurance company deciding Jesus was a liability. Now, this goes to show how heartless the atheists are. The Christians tried to compromise. They offered to take this picture down from the middle school, put it up in the high school. That wasn't good enough for the atheist. Assholes.
Well, I mean, they're getting threatened by a lawsuit now, right? That's the whole thing?
Yeah, exactly. The ACLU, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they got together with I believe it was one parent and two students.
So I'm not that impressed now. I mean, yes, the godless good guys won, but they're only taking down the painting because they're just about to lose a costly lawsuit. It's like buying car insurance to cover the accident you just had, you know?
Right, but it is a real signpost for us, because 10 years ago, this would not have happened in this way. But it only takes a couple of successful lawsuits like the Elquist suit to really change things around for the insurance companies. Once the insurance company said, look, we're not going to cover you for this, we don't think you can win, they're like, well, we can't use taxpayer money on it, so they just pulled it. That's how we're going to win these fights.
Well, I'm not sure taking down the Jesus painting will completely destroy Christianity the way our evil atheist plot intended, but it's something, you know, it'll have a good local impact.
And in more shameful news, a new poll finds that 13% of Americans think Obama is the Antichrist. Now, a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, have already heard about this survey. It's not just us that found this surprising.
That's absurd. I mean, major biblical characters like God and Satan are clearly white. Can you believe these idiots? You think the metaphysical world is miscegenated?
Well, apparently, I mean, this was a great survey. I don't know how much of it I believe, but there were statistics in here like 9% of people believe that fluoride is added to the water to control our minds. It's not. 20% of Americans believe that childhood vaccines are linked to autism. They're not. 4% of people believe that shape-shifting lizards secretly control our government.
Well, that one's true.
Yeah, probably. And sometimes you're combing through the news sources and you just see a headline so promising, you know it's going to make the show even before you read the article. I'm looking at the Christian Newswire because that's what I'm willing to do for you listeners, and I saw this. This is the headline, and I quote, Stephen Hawking solves Bible creation mystery, proving the Bible accurate.
That's an actual headline, word for word?
I didn't change a thing. Sometimes you don't even have to.
Well, that settles that. Q-E motherfucking D. Done.
And basically, you can read the article. It's every bit as stupid as what you expect when you see that headline. It's this apologist, Paul Hitchens, and he's trying to employ, it's a really popular tactic with the Muslims. They'll cherry pick one or two things out of the Quran and say, see, look, this presages science, and this is what science believes now, and therefore the Quran is the word of God. And he's trying to do this with the Genesis creation narrative. There's I think, 8 words in the Bible that aren't directly contradicted by science. But nevertheless, he's going to take the wonkiest one and say, oh, look, science proves it.
Every time science finds something, Christians are like, yeah, that's what we meant, too. Remember in the Bible when it says that really vague thing, the using the word dust? Stephen Hawking stole the whole dust idea from us.
Oh, it's even worse than that. I mean, here's just a small sampling of the interpretation favors you have to do to get where he's trying to go. First of all, when Genesis talks about 6 days, what they mean is 6 unequal periods of indeterminate time, and thus any time frame imaginable would be 6 days.
Like a discrepancy in the hour-by-hour time frame of Genesis was the atheist's big problem with biblical creationism. Once you reconcile that time issue, Genesis is airtight. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
He has a few other things that he tackles, like when it says, let there be light, what he really meant was let the sun transition from a protostar to a main sequence star.
Oh.
Obviously.
astronomers.
That helps settle the whole making the sun 4 days after the Earth thing. He also says that, of course, all of the planetary fragments of the proto solar system there would have still blocked the sunlight from Earth. So you would, after the fourth day, which is actually any amount of time you could possibly imagine, you could see the light. Of course, there wouldn't be anyone to see the light, so it'd be insignificant and inconsequential. But, you know, he pretty much scientifically proves God there.
They're taking a little bit of poetic license in the interpretation.
None at all.
Editorializing slightly, no?
None. It says there several times in his article, it corresponds exactly to the Genesis account.
Okay.
Now that does it for headlines. Heath, I appreciate your help as always.
Glad to be here as always.
And if you don't mind sticking around when we come back, Lucinda Lusions will join Heath and I for a little Bible study.
Excellent. Hey, Chief, did you get a chance to look at that draft I sent you of the Bible?
Oh, yeah, the fictional allegory book. I looked it over. I'll tell you what, why don't you have a seat?
Sure. How'd you like it?
I didn't love it. I'm just a little worried that people might take it literally.
Come on, seriously? The stories are absurd. How could someone take them literally?
Well, it seems like whenever the scripture department releases something, readers tend to get a little carried away. You remember the shit that happened after we printed the Torah? Oh, my God. Which actually, that reminds me, it seemed like you pretty much plagiarized the entire Hebrew Bible for the first half of your book. Is that what you did?
Listen, the Jews are not a very litigious people. Maybe I'll add a few footnotes to properly cite the direct quotes.
Don't get me wrong, that thing's way overdue for a sequel. I just didn't think we had to reprint the whole first book with it. You know, that's going to cost a pretty shekel.
I'll be honest, I had a little bit of writer's block, and I couldn't really seem to get the ball rolling.
Look, I understand borrowing from it. That's not a huge problem. It's not like religious texts are just going to pop into your head divinely inspired and ready to print or anything.
Right, I'm not just going to find a bunch of golden plates with the words of God etched into them for me. So I did some research, and the Torah had a lot of stuff very similar to what I was looking to write myself. One God, omnipotent vengeance scenarios, getting really mad at any future religion that also likes the Middle East. It just made sense as a jumping-off point, is what I'm saying.
I'll tell you what, we'll circle back to that one. Open up your book to the Leviticus section.
I've got to stop you right there. I know what you're going to say. That was a really weird time for me. I had to stone my fourth concubine and three slaves to death that month. Lots of mixed emotions.
I'm just thinking maybe a little disclaimer at the beginning. Novelty purposes only, maybe.
It's not like a giant population the world over is going to get swept up in some sort of crusade to make sure everyone agrees word for word with my little book here.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm probably just getting paranoid. I did have one other concern, though. Why all the hate against gays?
What?
All the anti-homosexual passages.
Where are there any anti-homosexual passages?
Well, there's a couple of them right here in Leviticus. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination. And yeah, there's one in Romans. There's one in Judah. It seems like you're at least tacitly allowing the lesbian stuff, but still.
I thought it was clear this section was tongue-in-cheek. I guess I really didn't sell the sarcasm enough.
And also, what's with all this Yoda talk? And the weird numbering? Do you really think people are going to refer back to this one book line by line and need reference numbers? Normal page numbers like any other book should be just fine.
That was a software issue. I wrote the thing in Aramaic, and when the word processor translated the characters over to Times Old Roman Latin, a bunch of random numbers showed up by accident.
All right, can we skip ahead to this New Testament part? Now, I get what you're going for here, and I like the idea of God having a kid kind of spruces up the sequel, but this whole first part seems way off to me. You got four chapters telling the same story over and over, disagreeing with each other like crazy. It was just weird.
Yeah, I started off with a choose-your-own-adventure concept in mind, but eventually I slapped everything together in that opening chunk.
Look, I'm going to level with you. Right now, religious texts are hot no matter what we print.
Amen.
Epic Poetry Division hasn't had a bestseller in centuries, so we're probably going to... There's a lot of problems with this manuscript, but we're probably going to go ahead with it.
Good to hear.
Now, do you have anything in mind for the sequel?
I'm thinking about an illiterate, child-raping warlord.
Ooh, I like it. He should have a sidekick, maybe a flying horse? Hey, It's time for the atheist calendar portion of the show, where we set aside a few minutes to talk up some of the great atheist and secular meetups going on around the country and around the world. We'll start off with a Skeptic Camp event in Essex County, Massachusetts on April 13th. Runs from 9:30 to 4, has some really interesting topics lined up, and ends with a skeptical trivia event that should be a lot of fun. On April 20th, we have the South Dakota Conference of Reason in Sioux Falls, and I know that people who live in and around South Dakota have a lot of choices when it comes to atheist and secular conferences, but this one should be worth a drive. On the 27th of April, we've got another Skeptic Camp event in Denver with an equally impressive slate of topics, including a pretty promising talk on pseudo-astronomy, woo and women's health, and teen atheist outreach. Also in Atlanta, we've got a 3-day Skeptic Camp conference starting on the 3rd of May and running through the weekend. And how could I not mention the fact that the Brisbane atheists are hosting a pirate party for their monthly meetup on April 30th. I'd love to go just to find out what pirate speak sounds like with an Australian accent. And incidentally, if any of my Australian listeners want to settle that mystery for me, feel free to send an audio clip in. Now that'll do it for the Atheist Calendar this week, but before I go, I want to remind everybody that if you're involved with an atheist, skeptical, or secular event that could use some publicity, let me know. Also, if you're aware of any good online resources for such events, let me know about those as well. You'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com, and remember, we're weekly now, so I need all the help I can get filling this segment. You ever make one of those decisions that you regret while you're still making it? Well, tonight my lovely wife Lucinda is joining Heath and me for just such a decision. Lucinda, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And Heath, you were already here, and you've been here the whole time, but I feel like a dick if I left you out, so welcome to still being here as
Thank
well.
Thank you. I feel very extra and welcomed now that you said that.
Awesome. So in an effort to prove our undying commitment to our listeners, we've made something of a pact between the three of us, and I hate to say it because as soon as I say it, we actually have to go through it, but the three of us are going to read the Bible.
What?
Yay!
What? What?
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Scathing atheist. Okay.
Yes, yes. Grown atheist adults having Bible study. We're going to cram thousands of pages of irrelevant bullshit into our brains just so we can better appreciate the level of cognitive dissonance it takes to believe every word of it.
So what did you just suggest? We're going to go see the Book of Mormon on Broadway?
We can do that, too. We're going to go book by book through the Bible on this very program, and we're going to do it in a segment that we'll be calling...
The Holy Babble.
And we'll be introducing that segment tonight in a segment that we call The Introduction to
The Holy Babble.
Alright, now Lucinda, this was largely your idea. So in your mind, why should we read the Bible?
This was your idea?
It was not my idea.
Well,
great.
Keep in mind that at the time, I hadn't planned on reading the Bible. It was more of a suggestion for what you and Heath could do.
Yes, it was your idea that me and Heath do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to have anything to do with it. No, I figured if you're going to fight against this madness and encourage others to as well, we should know as much about it as we can. I mean, if nothing else, we should know as much as the Christians claim to.
Know thine enemy's silly book.
Exactly.
Right,
who
exactly.
knows? Maybe some brave Christian soul will wander into our podcast and follow us along as we talk about each book, and he may actually be saved.
I don't think he's going to make it past the sponsor, honestly. But and I guess the logical place to start the discussion is with the Bibles themselves. Now, to get the most out of this experience, we've all decided to read different translations of the Bible. So tell me, Lucinda, which Bible did you pick and why?
I chose the New International Version, the NIV.
Ooh.
It's the world's most widely read version. According to Biblica.com, it's also the most trusted, note the air quotes there.
Yes, the
English
listeners
translation
certainly
of the Bible.
Saw the air quotes.
big air quotes.
Right. And also according to Biblica.com, because it's written in modern English, I can hear God talk to me in today's time.
Oh, perfect. That's a nice
feature.
Yeah,
I figured, I'd go with that.
All right, so how about you, Heath?
I went with the King James Bible.
Okay, now as I understand it, that is kind of the worst translation. Is that why you picked it?
Well, I found it for free online, and I don't want to give any money to any churches, so that's the one I have, and I'm going with that one. Shotgun free King James.
I like it. That's a good, because I did exactly the opposite. I bought this huge bastard right here. $50 worth of Bible that you hear right
you
there.
Did you hear that? You could
have
slap
fun
it.
With that.
This
just
is
a
the
lot of face
fully
slapping.
Revised 4th edition New Oxford annotated Bible with Apocrypha.
It's got like maps and shit. I mean, this is some serious Bible right here. Now, like I said, I had three reasons for choosing this Bible. One is that I was listening to Post-Rapture Looting the other day. They had a Bible as History professor on. That's the one he recommended, and he seemed to know his shit. Number two, of course, is that I wanted to have a Bible that was more awesome than the Bibles that you guys had. And number three is that it has maps, so when it gets really bad, I can just pretend I'm reading a really boring part of Lord of the Rings.
There's no boring parts in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, okay.
The walking? Are you kidding?
That's great. Walking. So none of us have read the Bible before, is that correct?
I have not read through the entire text of any particular Bible before. I have dabbled. We had this game in college to take a Bible and flip to a random page and, you know, take some artistic license and change up the text a little bit, kind of edit one page of the Bible. It seemed really, you know, super, super, like, heretical at the time, and we, like, you know, it was a good statement.
Gotcha, gotcha. And that's pretty much the extent of your familiarity with the book?
Right, so no, I have not read the Bible.
Gotcha. And how about you, Lucy?
I've edited the Bible, though. I made it better. I read it myself.
I pretended to read the Bible every night for about an hour before bed for a couple of years. But no, I've never actually, you know, I was 11 at the time, so, you know, it didn't make much sense. Not that it, you know, really makes much more sense now, but no, I've never read it.
Gotcha. Now, I think it's safe to say that we're all kind of dreading this whole thing, but is there a particular part that you're dreading most?
I'm honestly worried I might get converted. If I read into it, I mean, you know, they might have some really good stuff to say. Who knows? But, I mean, they seem to have talked a whole lot of people into it.
Well, now, I would say the research shows that the more familiar you are with the Bible, the more likely you are to be an atheist, or vice versa. The research shows that atheists are more familiar with the Bible, but I think you can extrapolate one from the other, so I wouldn't worry too much about that.
A lot of covariances in terms of atheists being more familiar with things than other people. So.
Very political way to put it. How about you, Lucinda?
Yeah, besides reading the Bible, I don't know, maybe I'm dreading the stress the most. They don't take so kindly to us chicks in that their book, so
right.
I see a lot of Bible throwing in my near future.
To be fair, though, it's not just the Bible. It's not just the Bible. Pretty much every religion hits on women.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but, you know. Yeah. If I had any of the other books, I'd probably be throwing them, too. No, I'm not looking forward to being pissed off a whole bunch. I don't like to get angry.
Why aren't all women atheists at this point?
That's right?
Ridiculous. They just get shit on all over the place, every religion.
I don't
monotheism,
get it.
Polytheism, everything but atheism.
And is there anything that you are looking forward to?
That's a tough one. I mean, I'm sure I'm looking for...
Revelations 22:21.
Right, I'm not sure I'm looking forward to it at all, but, I guess I'd have to say I'm looking forward to the being able to read between the lines, you know, not just what they cherry-pick for you at Sunday school and, you know, behind the pulpit and everything. I'm looking forward to getting all of the juicy details and everything. I mean, I want you
right,
to know.
Right, and that's pretty much where I'm at with it. I'm looking forward to page 7 because by then I'll have read more of the Bible than 90% of Christians, and when they start bringing shit up, I'll be like, have you actually read that book in context or that passage in context?
It's great to confuse the shit out of people by quoting their book at them to beat them in an argument. That's got to be a bonus, too.
Right. Now, we're going to be doing, like I said, book by book, but that's going to wrap up the Holy Babel segment for tonight. Heath, Lucinda, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent.
It was fun.
Enjoyed it.
Not looking
all right,
to
and we'll see you guys for the creation of Earth and the heavens.
It will be good.
Just a couple of quick announcements before we close out the show. We've been putting a few segments of the program on YouTube, so if you wanted to share part of the show with somebody who might not be able to make it through the whole thing, check out our YouTube channel for some bite-sized pieces of The Scathing Atheist. We've also added a donation button to the website, so if you're anxious to give us money, you can do that as well. Those donations are tax-deductible, but unfortunately that's only for residents of Tatooine, Mordor, and the magical land of Hyrule. The rest of you still have to pay your taxes. We'll have the long version of the Holy Babel segment up on the extras page on the website soon, so be sure to check that out. Wanted to thank everybody who's made their way over to iTunes to leave us a 5-star review, and of course I have to thank Lucinda and Heath for helping out tonight. Also wanted to throw a big thanks to George Robb for providing the Farnsworth quote to start us out tonight, also for entertaining the shit out of my wife and by last Friday. The guy's an incredible musician, so if you're a big fan of the music, find an opportunity to watch him live. It's an incredible experience. I'll have links to his upcoming events on the show notes for the page. Also has a really fun podcast, and I'll link to that as well. That does it for tonight, but if you want more, be sure to check out our radically published blog. Follow us on Twitter at @Noah_Illusions. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube, listen to us on Stitcher, and give us money. If you want to learn more about the news items and events discussed on this program, check out the show notes for this episode. If you have any comments, questions, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this program was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. A second, we didn't fuck anything up. What am I going to put at the end of the show?
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.